offering a most humble and loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to yet another session of Afternoon Satsang. And it would be apt to begin by greeting all listeners a very happy, prosperous and joyous Independence Day. 15th of August 1947, we are celebrating the 67th Independence Day of our great land. And this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, as always being joined by Arvind from Team Radio Sai, extending you a warm welcome to this week's Afternoon Satsang. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem. And yes, as you rightly pointed out, this is a very special day. You know, special days come often in a year, but some days become extra special because of 2-3 reasons for which they are special. Today it's a beautiful day out here, at least in Puttaparthi, Prashanti. It's a beautiful day, a cool day, where we have been saturated with Bhagwan's love in the form of rains.
Right.
It is the Independence Day. It's a Holy Thursday. And, you know, I'm just filled with love and joy and gratitude for such a beautiful day, a beautiful life. Just makes me think what we would have done had not Bhagwan been part of our lives. Because even when it comes to independence, it is Swami who taught us what is the true meaning of independence. In fact, Swami never calls it as Indian independence. He always used to call it as Bharatiya Swarajyam. And the way Swami defines Bharatiya, Bharatiya is loosely translated as Indian. But the way Swami translates Bharatiya is so phenomenal. And in the same manner, the way Swami translates Swatantra or Swarajya is so phenomenal. It really gets us so inspired.
Right, and the most common translation which Swami gives, and the beautiful one, is Bharatiya. Swami says, the one who is attached to the Lord.
Yes, Swami says Bha stands for
Bhagwan.
Bhagwan. And Rati for one who has deep yearning and love and attachment for. So dear listeners, that in that manner, you know, a few years ago, in 2004 to be precise, that was what Swami told all of us students. He said that this is not a day only for people of within the geographical boundaries of India. He said, celebrate this as a day for a true Bharatiya. And a true Bharatiya, Swami defined, is a person who has this undying love for God. So, and therefore, it is a universal term. And that is why, Prem, you would have noticed that whenever Swami makes references in his discourses, he never calls it Indians. He always says Bharatiyas, Bharatiyas. His reference is always to those who have love for God. And when he says Bharatiya culture, it is a culture that is comprised based on the foundation of love for God, and it does not necessarily restrict only to the geographical boundaries of India. In that way, today is a day of universal celebration.
Right, absolutely. But you know, it's difficult to grasp this concept of Swami's Bharatiya for people who are not in Swami's fold, you know.
Hmm.
But even if you go by the geographical definition of what we call India today, it has such a, you know, spiritual connotation.
Hmm.
If you look at it, Bharatiyas, we call ourselves Indians. You know, we sitting here may be so completely different even by appearance to somebody, say, let's say in Assam, Sikkim,
Punjab,
or somebody in Kashmir.
Hmm.
You know, we look so different even for physical appearance.
Our
eating, heights are different, our eating habits are different, the way we dress is different, the way we speak is different, the rituals in our cultures are so different.
Exactly.
The marriages are performed differently, the names are so different, but they are Indian as much as we are Indian. You know, the idea of unity in diversity, that you don't have to look same, you don't have to have the same kind of approach to life to be united. That itself is a feeling which comes forth so strongly, even if you go by the geographical idea of India, isn't it?
Perfect. I mean, it extends beyond even the people, you know. If you take climates, we have all kinds of climates. In India, we have regions which have snow-capped mountains. We have deserts. We have equatorial forest lands. We have tropical forest lands. We have coastal regions. Even in terms of geography, it is so varied. In terms of the crops that are grown, it is so varied. Such a variety exists here, No wonder that Swami used to often say, Yenna Bharate Tanna Bharata, which means, what is not found in Bharat cannot be found anywhere else in the world.
Very true. And you know, the stories which go for this unity, I think one thing which Indianness stands for is like you can take any path to reach God. You know, that is something which has stood out in this concept of India, literally. And if you look at it, some of the great stories, beautiful stories, even one which I was going through even this morning, is how the Parsi community came and settled in India. It's a beautiful story of how this small section of Zoroastrians who were persecuted in their homeland traveled towards India seeking refuge. And they land in the coast of Gujarat and they come to the king who is ruling there and they come to his court and they seek refuge. And they say, this is our situation, we have come here to be part of your land. And very symbolically, the king asks for a trough of milk. You know, he sends word to bring a vessel of milk filled to the brim. And symbolically telling the people that my country is already full. You know, I have no space. So one of the priests in the Zoroastrian immigrants, from his bag, he brings out a fistful of sugar and drops it into that milk. He says, we will not let you overflow. We will mingle amongst you and become part of you. Wow. And not only will we become part of you, but we will also enrich you. We will sweeten you. And then the king opens his arms and says, please come and settle here.
Indeed, that has been the history of Bharat. That has been the history of India. Embracing people of all religions. If we see, India is probably the only land where no religion has been persecuted as such. It has been home for all religions. Everybody lives harmoniously here. And I wonder if, you know, the community that you mentioned, Parsis, the Zoroastrians, just yesterday I was with a group of devotees who had come from Trinidad. And many of them were not aware of Zoroastra, Zarathustra and the Parsis. That is when I realized that probably India is the only place where the Parsis are in such big numbers. Probably they do not exist anywhere else. And they have found a place even in Swami's Sarvadharma symbol. The fire that burns on, that is present in the symbol. So really, as you said, even if we take the literal geographical boundaries of India, it has so many deep messages and the spiritual message of unity in diversity, which brings on divinity too.
And it is from Swami we have learned this patriotism. You know, so many people who come here, we all enjoy the idea of India and we all enjoy celebrating the Indian independence. But one can learn true patriotism when we see Swami. Because, you know, here is somebody, what we're going to see, where Swami has declared many times, I don't belong to any land, I don't belong to any race, I don't belong to any community. That is what Swami has declared time and again, and it is one of the main declarations in a document which we are going to go through today.
Exactly.
That Swami who said, be proud to be an Indian. And he would often say, we Bharatiyas have to be proud, including himself in that, you know, in that concept of Indianness. He's so proud to be a part of that concept, isn't it?
Exactly, Prem. We were speaking about the term Bharatiya and Indian. Now, shifting the focus to the other word which is spoken about today, that is independence. You know, again, my memories and my heart goes back to that beautiful interview in 2004, during which, you know, Swami so beautifully revealed what does independence mean. You know, the Sanskrit word for independence is Swarajya. And then if you break it up, it stands, Swa stands for self and Rajya stands for rule. Swami said, when the self rules, self is Atma. When the Atma rules, that is true independence. And then Swami said, that is why independence is independence. Dependence on what is within. And that within is the Atma or God. So, you know, if we go by these formulae that we have derived, it turns out that independence is actually dependence on God. We are truly free when we are completely dependent on God. Because independent or dependence on what is inside the Atma is nothing but dependence on God. And isn't that such a elevating and beautiful definition of independence? If you want to be truly independent, if you want to be truly free, depend completely on God. Depend completely on Swami.
Absolutely. You know, this very concept, contrastingly, if you talk of two freedom fighters. One is Aurobindo Ghosh. You know, he had that insight that at one point during his struggle for freedom, he gets a vision where Krishna says that the independence is granted and it will happen. And at that point, he gives up being a part of that independence struggle. You know, he says, I have to prepare my countrymen. After they get the independence, how are they going to go forth? And he takes and he becomes a spiritual guru. You know, that is the story of Aurobindo Ghosh. And if you look at the life of Rabindranath Tagore, who is again a patriot, he says, at one point, he says, I was part of the struggle only because a political freedom is required for man to pursue his spiritual freedom. And he says, at one point, I feel that this is becoming more political than spiritual, so I'm stepping aside, away from it.
The same sentiments and feelings were even echoed by Subhash Chandra Bose. You know, people know Subhash Chandra Bose as a person who took up arms against the British. But again, during this 2004 interview, that was when, you know, Swami spoke so glowingly of Subhash Chandra Bose. That is what made all of us students from the second year postgraduate class to go deeper into Subhash Chandra Bose's life. And when we go in there, you know, we came across a letter that Subhash Chandra Bose, Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose, the first commander-in-chief of India's army, maybe, India's own, the INA, the Indian National Army, he writes to his mother saying, Mother, this freedom that we are fighting for, the political freedom from the British, is only the first step, and it is only a small part of what freedom actually is. Freedom is something that has to be discovered within and not external. But this external freedom is a prerequisite for us to be free enough to pursue this freedom that is internal. And that is when we realize that even an apparently, you know, warmongering person like Subhash Chandra Bose also had such deep spiritual roots. It is so inspiring. No, little wonder that Swami spoke so glowingly about him.
And having spoken about these great people, having spoken about Rabindranath Tagore, the father of our Indian national anthem, so I think we should take a few moments and play this song which was made by our colleagues at Radio Sai to celebrate this wonderful moment of Indian independence. Dear listeners, you must have heard it. If you've tuned in earlier this day, you would have heard this a couple of times. But nevertheless, we're going to play it for you another time.
And yeah, Prem, I had not tuned in, so I have not heard. So I would love to listen to it.
And I think it wouldn't be out of place to speak a little about the Indian national anthem at the end of it, because that will directly land us where we are going to pick the thread from.
For this week's Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
So let's go straight in and listen to that wonderful piece made by Brother Anirudh of Radio Sai and team. Ah.
Wow. What beautiful it was, Prem. You know, it again brought that feeling of unity, because the instruments that have been used in creating this piece are not only the Indian instruments, Western instruments, and even among the Indian instruments, some are those that are traditionally used in Hindustani kind of music, the other that are used in Carnatic kind of music. Then there is, you know, light music. All of them apparently do not go together. But here, they have been gelled together so beautifully to give that rich harmony. It really enhances the feeling that indeed unity in diversity is the way to feel and see divinity.
And absolutely. But I think I will quickly go through the names of those people who contributed to this music. Beautiful, beautiful vocals and the instrumental. As always, we had our brother Anirudh from Radio Sai, who did the mixing, the whole arrangement. His voice, we heard that beautiful alap, him, Anirudh and Ashwath. Kaustubh in that soul-stirring Hindustani alap, which was going on in the background in the beginning. And then Mohanavina by a student, Mani Krishna. Sitar by our teacher from the music college, Surinarayan Murthy. And Veena by our own Sai Prasad of Radio Sai. And we had flute by Mr. Pramod Umapati, a person who's been giving us a great support for our products. And again, Surinarayan Murthy on the Dilruba. Mridangam by Sudhir, who's again part of our Radio Sai team. And Harry, Mr. Harry, was there on the percussions there. And some of the sounds which you've never heard before, and wonderfully gelled with that music which we've been composed. And of course, our own Dhananjay doing that wonderful mixing. But beautiful, you know, how many times you've heard this Janaganamana?
The national anthem.
Mm-hmm. And you can never tire, right?
Exactly. And as you were narrating the names, really I felt so happy, Prem, that even here at Radio Sai, how Swami has given us this beautiful opportunity to feel that kind of unity in diversity. There are more than 30-40 of us either working here full-time or part-time or volunteering. And of course, not to forget our global volunteers, which runs into nearly 100. How beautifully Swami has brought us all together. And there is a message in that. Love for God unites us. Divinity, unity, these are all synonymous with each other. If there is divinity, unity automatically comes in. It feels so wonderful. In fact, I'm not exaggerating when I say that some of the things that I share with and experience in the presence of with this family that Sai has gifted is far more wonderful and superior to what I share with the relatives and friends that blood has gifted. That is the kind of magic that divinity does.
And that is why even this song, which was written by Rabindranath Tagore, which the first few verses of that song became our national anthem, it's so wonderful. And it is, again, the song which we played, written by Swami, Aharahatava, which is like the adaptation of, the Telugu adaptation of this original Bengali song. No, Jana Gana Mana Adhinayaka Jaya. You are the one who is actually the true leader of the land, of people of this land.
The controller of people's destiny.
Bharata Bhagya Vidata. You're the one who controls the destiny of this land. And you know, your name is sung from the north to the south, to the rivers of this land sing your name. The people of Dravid, the people of, Bengal, the people of Gujarat, all sing your praise. And to such a Lord, let victory come to such a Lord. Jai Hai, Jai Hai, Jai Hai.
I, many times, you know, when I listen to the national anthem, I don't feel like this is a song which glorifies the land. It is glorifying God. And that is why, again, please forgive this repeated mention of the year 2004, when we were putting up a drama, when we thought how relevant would it be for us to sing the Indian national anthem in Sai Kulwanthal, because Sai Kulwanthal has people from all countries, people from everywhere in the world. Swami said, sing, everybody will join in because everybody has that feeling. And that is when we went into the meaning of the song and we saw that there is nothing that glorifies the land as such. It just says that people from this part, everybody sings the glory of the one who is the controller of Bharat's destiny. It's all a song in praise of the Lord. And then we found how what Swami said is perfectly true. Because for everybody in Kulwanthal, all have gathered just to sing and revel in the glory and beauty of Swami.
And having said that, you know, we said Bharat Bhagya Vidata, you're the one who has come to control our destinies. And going by the definition of Bharatiyas, those who are attached to God, if you see it in that light, Bharat Bhagya Vidata is that Lord who has come to control and protect the destinies of all those who are attached to God.
And with that, we come straight to a very historic and momentous letter. A letter which is often said as a letter written by Baba to his brother. But in fact, if we go through the contents of the letter, we realize that it is a letter from Baba, from our dear Swami, to the whole world, to the whole universe, for all times to come. And the beautiful thing is, this letter also was written in the very same year when India got its political independence.
The year 1947, 25th of May. And what a letter. I mean, it's celestial poetry, actually, nothing short of that.
Mm.
Because I was reading a wonderful article written by Professor Kasturi many years ago about this very letter. And he said the context of that letter was so beautiful because here was young Satya, barely into his 20s.
And before that, Prem, I think we should, just in case there are some of our listeners who are not aware, just give them a background about how this letter came up.
Right.
Yeah. So this happened because Swami's elder brother Sheshamaraju, he had seen Baba's dramatic return from Uruvakonda.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we discussed in the last two fortnights about when we talked about Satyam Shivam Sundaram. He saw Baba's devotee grow in numbers and he saw the gradual development of the mandir and the acts of wonder and devotion during the festivals. When he saw all this, the brother in him just got a little scared and worried for Swami. You know, he felt scared and concerned when those from nearby places began to scorn Baba for all the acts that he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
They called him a trickster, they called him a person possessed. Sheshamaraju was also further troubled by the derogatory comments that were being written about Baba from time to time.
Okay.
So the brother in him could not just take all these insults lying down, because he believed that just as his younger brother Baba, who's now become a Baba, had a meteoric rise, he would soon have a crashing fall. And therefore he wrote a letter to, you know, his younger brother, like an elder brother, full of love. And in that letter, he cautioned him about the imminent outcome of all these activities. And therefore, he, you know, pleaded with him to discontinue all this. It was in response to this letter that Baba wrote the historic letter that we are speaking about. Yes.
And you know, Kasturi writes in that, he says, one of the things which Seshamaraju writes to Swami is, we thought you will finish your school education, that you will complete your BA, and you will join a good job in the government. So what a waste it is now. Okay. And Kasturi writes, imagine if Swami had gone on to do his BA and become a government officer. What a waste it would have been.
Yes, he didn't do a BA, you know, he did a double BA. He did BA, BA, and therefore he became Baba.
And you know, that was the context in which Swami writes this poem. And also again, Kasturi writes that imagine he is replying to his brother, who is himself a teacher of Telugu. He's a Telugu teacher.
Mm.
That's how we saw how Swami moved from Uruvakonda to Kamalapuram, where he got posting in the government schools.
Correct.
As a and he used to pride himself of being a poet, Seshamaraju. So Swami writes a letter to him, which is filled with poetry.
Hmm. Exactly.
And I think Swami very well knew that this is not going to be a letter which is going to be read and discarded. This is going to be a letter which is going to be read and read, reread again and again and cherished.
Just like the Bhagavad Gita, just like the Bible, just like the Quran. And as you said, Prem, the letter is filled with poetry. I mean, it becomes tough to say that, you know, Swami wrote this and then this poem and wrote this and then this poem, because the whole letter itself is poetry. And it is with actually a slight trepidation that taking up this act of reading out this letter, because no English translation can ever match up to the Telugu.
Absolutely.
In fact, the popular version that is available online, and you know, that is what Professor Kasturi has given it, he has definitely embellished it with English poetry so that it matches Telugu poetry. But the problem that happens when you do such things is the beauty and simplicity of the language of Telugu is lost. But when we translate it the way we are doing now, with the simplicity of the Telugu maintained, then the poetry is lost. It's almost impossible to get that simplicity and poetry in any other language with human effort, it seems. So, and therefore, dear listeners, what we present now is an attempt to show the simplicity and beauty of that letter. The poetry of the letter is beautifully portrayed by Shri Kasturi, and that is there, present on the internet as Baba's historic letter to be read. So here it is. You know, the letter starts off with Swami answering his brother about the criticism that he brought up. Swami says, "People talk and do what they like. However, as long as we have perseverance, character and wisdom, nothing adverse will happen to us. People pelt stones only on fruit-laden trees. Wherever there is good, there is bad, and wherever there is bad, there remains good. That is a must. There is no world without this dichotomy. It is ignorance that throws people into spells of anger, lust, and darkness of arrogance. People write things about which they have no knowledge because they write out of jealousy. The wise will never speak in such a manner. It is not good for us to go by the words of ignorant people. Satya will always be victorious. Untruth will never succeed. Even if untruth enjoys temporary success, it will evaporate with the blossoming of truth. It is not good for the Mahatmas to be elated when they are praised and feel let down when they are criticized. You might have read the life stories of great legendary characters and incarnations of God and known of the great trials that they faced. It's quite natural for Mahatmas to be criticized in that manner. Why do you worry of such things? How long can dogs bark at the stars or bay at the moon? Likewise, this adverse publicity too is temporary. Satya will win ultimately. Self-reliance and beneficial activity, the great ones tread upon these paths. As long as we are engaged in promoting the welfare of devotees and allotting them the fruits of their actions, why at all should we worry? In the final analysis, all human like and dislike pertain only to the physical body and not to the Atma." Having written this, Swami then, in beautiful poetry, announced some really phenomenal declarations as simple statements.
I think we will play that Telugu poetry as rendered by the famous singer P. Sushila. And then at the end of it, we'll give the, what should I say, the best translation we can in English for it.
భక్తి నాకు ప్లగును భూమిని
To protect all mankind and ensure for all of them life full of ananda. That is my task. To lead all who stray away from the straight path again into goodness and save them. That is my vow. I am attached to a work that I love, to remove the sufferings of the poor and grant them what they lack. To rescue all who worship and adore me with nishtha and niyama. That is my glory. And I have a definition of devotion. Those who treat good and bad as same in their mind. And those who surrender to me, I will never give them up. When I'm thus engaged in beneficial tasks,
how can my name ever be tarnished as you apprehend?
This is that beautiful, Mahavakya which Swami has given, saying what his task is, what his vow is, and how we can understand the mission of his avatar, literally.
Yes, and so dear listeners, we thought that it would be wonderful for this satsang, which is on Satyam Shyam Sundaram, that we discuss each line of this beautiful poem, because each line describes one facet, and it is so uplifting and thrilling to just comprehend what it means in totality. The first statement is, I have a task or determination. You know, we cannot translate it exactly. When Swami says Diksha, it means I'm determined. It's, at the same time, it also means it's a task. So, with full determination, Swami has taken upon himself the task to protect all mankind and to ensure for all of them lives full of ananda. Again, in the statement, Prem, you see, I was just thinking that Swami makes no distinction. He says, protect all mankind. There is no distinction based on caste, creed. It's always unity. Swami has always been like this, all inclusive, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, that is also something which was always reflecting even in Swami's childhood.
Hmm.
There was no difference. As Swami would often say, Swami was born in a Kshatriya family. But all the time he spent in Subhama's house, she was supposed to be a Brahmin.
A superior caste.
Superior caste. But he dined with everybody.
Exactly.
You know, if somebody from the so-called lower caste would invite him, he would go and dine with them too. There was no difference for him. You know, even whether it was his friends, Swami would say, talk about Ramesh and Suresh. Swami would say one was actually the son of a government official. And there were others who were, you know, from a lower family. But for him, everybody was the same.
Exactly, and because he did this, a lot of eyebrows were raised. You know, people were shocked. How can he do this? First of all, people criticized Subhama for allowing a boy of a lesser caste than a Brahmin to enter her kitchen. But then this boy would also enter the kitchens and enter the homes of people who were considered as untouchables in the society. And he literally lived a life of equality of all beings, equality of all beings. And that continued, you know, even, for example, when it came to prayer. Swami always encouraged us to pray for the whole world. He said, this is expansion love. In fact, I remember, he was not satisfied with praying for the whole world. He said, pray for all the beings in all the worlds. You may not know of them, but pray for them. You know, he changed Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu to samasta lokaha sukhino bhavantu.
Right.
And that small change means it changed, the prayer changed from may all the beings in this world be happy to may all the beings in all the worlds be happy. In fact, I remember in a discourse that Swami delivered on the Independence Day in the auditorium to the students, Swami made a very beautiful point. He said, why do I ask you to pray for the welfare of the whole world? He said, if the whole world is happy, then only can the country be happy. If the whole country is happy, then only can your state be happy. If your state is happy, then only can your town be happy. If your town is happy, then only your home can be happy. Only if your home is happy, then can you be happy. Your happiness depends on the happiness of the world. So expand in your heart. include everybody. And that has been his message.
Right. And that is why Swami has said, you know, the Diksha, the determination with which he has come is to give Ananda to everybody without any difference for all mankind.
We can see that in force, right? Even, I mean, not that it's the only example, but if we walk by the super speciality hospital that Swami has established, we see this in force day in and day out.
And you know, the beauty of it is, Swami has not brought about this unification of all mankind by traveling. You know, for Swami, it is like, you know, everybody is mine. And Swami has done it without leaving the country like other people. Of course, you know, the only travel which Swami has taken is that to East Africa when Swami went. And you know, interestingly, very beautifully, that incident which happened when Swami came back from East Africa, there was a huge festival which was organized to welcome Swami back. And Swami was asked to give a discourse. So Swami was on the platform giving a discourse, and Kasturi describes how he was in the other end of the stage. And what Swami told during that discourse was, see, suppose you go into your bedroom and then you come back into your living room. Do you have a festival to celebrate you coming from your from one room in your house to the other room? Swami said, this whole world, Swami says, that ee prapanchame na illu. That is what Swami told in that discourse. And, you know, Kasturi says that translating Swami's discourse can be a very challenging task, because you have to pick the right word. As we said, you know, how difficult it is to translate something poetic which Swami has uttered. So he said, to catch that right word and put it in the translation is very difficult. And he said, when Swami said, ee prapanchame na illu, Swami said, Kasturi translated it as, this whole world is my mansion. And he felt very happy with the usage of the word mansion.
Okay.
He said, here is the Lord. I didn't use the word home or house. I said, this whole world is his mansion. And he felt very proud that I've used this. Instantly, Swami turned to him and said, no, it's wrong. Okay, and he started shivering. He said, what mistake have I done now? And Swami did not stop with that. Swami walked up to him. And Kasturi describes that for a moment he felt, if Swami is going to come and slap me, it's better to go and receive it than give him the trouble of walking right across the stage. So he goes, and midway both Swami and Kasturi meet. And Swami said, not prapancham. You translated prapancham as this world. Swami said, not world, universe.
Wow.
And Kasturi, he was so overwhelmed by that, you know, act of Swami. There in the middle of the stage, he did Sashtang Pranam to Swami. And he came back and said, I stand corrected. This world is not his mansion. This universe is his mansion. And that is why for Swami, you know, the determination with which he came was to give Ananda to the entire mankind, not just to the Bharatiyas.
Exactly, Prem. And even today he continues to do it. Every time, just thoughts of him bring tears of joys in our eyes. Just feeling and reliving the memories of him brings such a kind of satisfaction and fullness into our lives, into our beings. You know, this doesn't happen with anybody else. This just cannot happen with any kind of normal human relationship. This is so divine, and that is why Swami stated this as his task. Because whether in the physical or not, he continues to shower this bliss and fullness of joy in the hearts of all of us.
And you know, being here in Radio Sai, one of the happy things that happened to us is to know about how Swami is reaching out to different corners of the globe. You know, people who heard the interview which we had with Dana Gillespie, you know, she says about how when she traveled to one of the Islamic countries,
Dagestan.
Yeah, some names which you have not heard unless, I mean, until we heard that interview.
Yeah, I remember it. It is spelled something like Dagestan.
Okay.
I never knew that such a country existed.
Right. And you know, she says that most of these places she goes, and she says they've all had a very troubled past. So she just goes there to heal them with her music. She said, the only thing which I have is the music which I have and the love which Swami has given. So she says, I just go there to share this music. And if at all anybody asks her, then she gives a picture of Swami and talks about Swami. So she says that one particular lady comes up to her and asks something, and she happens to give a picture of Swami, one of the pocket calendars she carries. And immediately the son comes by and says, I know this person. He played football with me even the last evening.
Wow.
And she was thinking that she's taking Swami to that, you know, world. And that is the beauty when Swami says, I am here for all mankind. A statement which Professor Anantraman every time repeats in his talk. He says, he looks at the students and he says, you've seen the world coming to Swami. I've seen Swami going out to the world. Because whichever part of the globe he has visited, thinking that he's taking the message of Swami, he realized that Swami was already there. Swami had already appeared there. Swami had already, you know, reached out to those people.
You know, Prem, what you said triggered off the memory of an experience that I once heard, narrated by Sri Sanjay Sahni sir in Trai Vrindavan. This was later even narrated in Bhagwan's Divine Presence in public too, in the Sai Kulwant Hall. I don't know whether it was 2003 or 2004, by another teacher, Sri Ruchir Desai from the Vrindavan campus. It maybe pertains to the next statement, you know, that Swami says, I have a vow to lead all those who stray away from the straight path again into goodness and save them. You know, you were talking about how in remote and very less known Dagestan, where Miss Dana Gillespie thought that she's taking Swami's name there and they were already familiar with Swami, the way Swami reaches out, and he reaches out, just as he said, to save people who stray away from the straight path and bring them back onto goodness. You know, this incident that I'm going to narrate now is so beautiful because it is really dramatic. You know, we often hear of incidents like cancer being cancelled, and it so happens that because we have heard it so many times, we say, oh, okay, so that person had cancer, he got healed. So this incident has some dramatic twists, and it's unique in that sense that I've never heard of it. Okay, so here goes. It so happened that one day a Sevadal person, a volunteer in the mandir, sees a person smoking.
Okay.
And this upsets him because it's not allowed, it's strictly prohibited. So he goes immediately, pounces on him and tells him, you stop smoking. This person says, sir, trust me, my entire life depends on it. And he's in a state of completely being overwhelmed. And there are tears in his eyes. So he says, just 3 more puffs and the cigarette is done. Let me do it. Because let me assure you that my life depends on this. You know, more than getting moved, this volunteer was very curious what on earth is going on. So after all, it was just 3 more puffs. So he allowed him. And then that person continued to remain in that state of being overwhelmed. And he said, come, I will tell you. So they walk out, they sit in a restaurant. And this person started narrating his tale, which I guess is one of the most dramatic that I've ever heard. He introduced himself as a regular smuggler of drugs from Kerala. So that was very shocking, because even if you're a drug smuggler, you won't introduce yourself as one. He began to narrate of how he used to, you know, do the smuggling. He would pack all these drugs in packets and load them up in his big boat, cover them on top with lots of coconuts, and then transport the drugs from Kerala to Bombay in Maharashtra, in the state of Maharashtra, by the ocean route, the sea route.
Okay.
So this was what he used to do on a regular basis. One day he says that as he was reaching the shores of Mumbai, of current day Mumbai, it was then Bombay, he suddenly saw one more boat coming towards him, and he got onto his alert. Because if this happens to be the police or the coast guard, he better be prepared. And how would he be prepared? Some of the coconuts that he carried on his boat were not just coconuts. They were bombs that have been disguised as coconuts. So all he had to do was just open up one and throw them, and that's it, you know. He was ready for the worst. But this boat happened to be a friendly boat, in the sense there were hardly any people on the boat. There was just one man, a very tall person, wearing a kind of a white old robe, shabby robe, and his hair had been tied up into a plait like thing in the cloth itself. So this person also had a mustache, a beard, white mustache and white beard. And he comes to him and he says directly, you may not know me, but I know you. Okay, so what more? He says that you have not had any children, right? Though you have been trying to get children, you have not had any children. Now this, our smuggler is really shocked. He's wondering how on earth does this person know about it. He says, I know. And I also know the reason why you're not getting children. And then he goes on to tell him that you have been ruining the lives of so many children with your drug smuggling. This person is now shocked because he also knows about my drug smuggling.
Mm-hmm.
Says, yes, I know about it. And because of that, you're not getting children. Now he gets a little doubt. He asks, are you the police? He says, I'm not the police, but they will be here soon. And he points out in a direction, and this smuggler is able to see that police boats, the Coast Guard boats, are drawing close.
Okay.
He's now worried. He's planning to do something to take action and protect his goods worth millions. When this stranger tells him, you know, I will save you. Just get onto my boat. I will get onto your boat. And all will be well. He thinks, well, this is a good deal, because if at all something happens untoward also, this is the guy who gets caught, I am saved. So they exchange boats at that time. The Coast Guard comes close, they board his boat and they ask him what is he carrying. And this stranger says that he is carrying coconuts and salt. Now they say that don't think we are fools. Who will transport salt by sea? So they dig below the coconuts, come to those packets, and when they open it is indeed salt. So the police, the Coast Guard of officials, they think that this guy is a crazy person to transport salt. They just let go of him and go back. Now our smuggler is shocked. He goes to him and he says that, you know, worth millions, that was goods worth millions. I am sure I bought drugs. It is not salt. The other stranger just tells him that for this good deed that you have done, he has not done any good deed, but he's given credit for the good deed. He says, because you're not going to peddle these drugs, there are no drugs anymore to peddle, I will grant you children. How many children do you want? So this person says, about 2-3 children. Now his, you know, respect for this person is growing. He says, okay, it is granted. And then he also gives him an address on a piece of paper and says, anytime you want, if you feel like meeting me, this is my address, you can come and meet me. And with that, they part company. The smuggler goes back, he begins to mend his ways, he feels a little bad about this, and he just tries out a new life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's indeed amazing that he is blessed with 6 children. 6 children, and years pass, after which he gets, you know, kind of dissatisfied with life in general. That is when he remembers this stranger that he had met more than 12 years ago on the sea. He decides to pay him a visit. He pulls out that piece of paper, picks up that address, and lands up, I don't remember exactly whether in Mumbai or in some other town in Maharashtra, but definitely in Maharashtra.
Okay.
He lands up and he goes to that address. He seeks out that address and finds that it is the address of a Shirdi Baba temple.
Okay.
Now, this person has not heard of Shirdi Baba till then.
Mm-hmm.
And when he steps into the temple, he begins to weep. He begins weeping because he feels that his dear friend is now no more. He thinks that that person who met him on sea was some philanthropist who is now dead, and it's a memorial erected in his honor. And when he is wailing thus, the priest of that temple comes to him and asks him what's wrong, and he says that, you know, this good friend of mine, I had met him, I thought I'll meet him again, but he's gone. And the priest asks him, when did you meet him? He says, I met him about 12-13 years back. He says, you must be joking. You know, this is Shirdi Baba, he's our lord. He gives him an introduction to Shirdi Baba and also tells him that it was in 1918 that Shirdi Baba cast away his body. Now the smuggler, the erstwhile smuggler, is so shocked. He's just unable to believe the amazing sequence of events that have happened. He bows down to the idol of Shirdi Baba and goes for pradakshina, circumambulation. As he's doing pradakshina, a flower falls from the idol of Shirdi Baba right in front of him. He picks up that flower and he's wondering what to do with it when he sees that in the flower is actually wrapped by a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
A piece of paper is going around the flower. He pulls out that piece of paper and opens it, and guess what is written on it?
What is it?
Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba Puttaparthi.
Wow.
Okay, it was as if Shirdi Baba is now announcing his arrival and telling. He makes inquiries and lands up in Puttaparthi. And this is the time when he has actually come to Puttaparthi. Now, when the smuggler is narrating this, the Sevadal is wondering, where on earth does this cigarette come into? You know, because that was what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he narrates that as soon as he landed at Prashanti, Puttaparthi, he had gone for darshan. And in the darshan lines, Bhagwan calls him out for an interview. In the interview room, Swami looks at him and asks him, don't you recognize me? He looks at this very unique face of Swami. And he's sure that if at all he had seen anybody, if he knows anybody like this in his life, he would surely remember.
You can't forget a face like this.
So he says, no, Swami, no. I don't know you. Then Swami just touches him on his head. And his previous life flashes before him. He was a close devotee. A person who had great love for Shirdi Baba, who served him throughout his life. And today, he sees how Shirdi Baba has come back again as Sathya Sai Baba, and how he, from a devotee, has come back as a smuggler. And he feels so, repulsed with his own self. He feels so repentant. Immediately after that vision, he comes out, he falls at Swami's feet and says, Swami, what have I done to my life? What have I done? I have strayed away from the path. What I was and what I have become today, is there any hope for me? Is there any redemption for me? And as he cries out like that, Swami did something that till now I had never heard of. Now, Swami waved his hand and materialized a cigarette, he says.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, this one cigarette you smoke, after that, all your old samskaras will be back. All these new dirty traits that you have obtained will be burnt away. And he says, that's why, sir, I did it. I'm leaving Prashanti. And that Sevadal apparently never again came across this person in Prashanti anymore. And that's all we know of the story. This is what was narrated in Tarai Brindavan by Sanjay Sani, sir, in Swami's presence. And as I said later again, in Kulwanthal by Shri Ruchir Desai, sir. It's so phenomenal. It just makes me wonder how many such stories we would have missed because they are not brought to public. To the public eye. It was indeed good fortune that Sevadal met Sani sir and narrated it to him, and sir in turn narrated this to all of us privately in Tarai Brindavan, after which it came out in public. Swami was just smiling as this narrative went on. But again, it highlights what Swami had said, I have a vow to lead all those who stray away from the straight path again into goodness and save them.
And a wonderful thing, you know, even as you're narrating, there's another incident which comes to my mind, is because especially when Swami is saying, I'll catch those who stray away from the right path and bring them back. Again, an incident which was narrated, I think, I must have heard it first during a Trai session. It seems one of Swami's devotees, who, again, this happened in Bombay, and he was getting into his car in the parking lot. Okay, even as he was getting in, he saw that there was a car parked ahead of his car. And there were three youngsters trying to break into the car.
Okay.
And he could clearly see that there were two elderly men who were trying to force a young teenager to open the car. Apparently, he was the one who was good at opening the locked car.
So they were the car thief.
Yeah, the car thief. So he realized that it was a scene of a car being stolen there. So at that moment, he wanted to come out and, you know, try to alarm people around or something. So when he was trying to get out, he very clearly heard a voice, which was Swami's voice, and it said, don't do anything, just watch.
Okay,
and he was surprised that, you know, such an instruction was coming from Swami. So he sat in his car and he saw the scene happening in front of him. He saw this young boy opening the car door, getting into the car, and just driving away. So he said, oh, okay, probably he's stolen the car now. So he just forgot about it. But many months later, when he came back to Parthi, Swami revealed the whole story to him. And, you know, what happened was, this boy gets into the car, and the moment he closes the door, he realizes that there's somebody sitting in the back seat.
Okay.
And he must have seen it in the rear view mirror or something. So he's shocked because it was a locked car and it was supposed to be, nobody was supposed to be in there. And that person sitting in the back seat was Swami, actually.
Wow.
And this boy had not seen Swami till then. So he tried to get out of the car. Swami said, no, don't run away. lock the car and start driving. If you know, nothing will happen to you, just start driving. So, you know, with no chance, nothing left to do, this boy starts the car and Swami gives him directions. You know, take this road, go this way, gives him some directions. And in front of a house, Swami says, yeah, stop here now. And Swami tells him to get out of the car and takes this boy, holds his hand and goes to the front of the door and rings the bell. Okay. And the lady of the house comes out and she's shocked to see Swami. Apparently they were devotees of Swami and she's shocked to see Swami standing at her doorstep. Okay, in Bombay. And Swami is holding the hands of a youngster. And Swami tells that lady, didn't I tell you that I will catch your son by his hand and bring him to your doorstep? Hold his hand. This is your son.
Wow.
And then Swami narrated what happened actually to that boy. They had apparently lost this boy as a young child in a crowd. And they had come to Swami many years later and they had cried to Swami how they had lost their son. And Swami had given her the word that I'll bring back your son. One day I'll catch him by his hand and bring him to your doorstep. And that was the same boy who had actually fallen to the wrong ways and got caught in a gang of car thief whom Swami had come to restore. So here, not only is Swami bringing somebody back to the right path, but also the promise which Swami has given here, you know, for those who have surrendered to me, I will take care of them.
Exactly. I will never give up those who attach themselves to me. That was the last statement of the poem. Well, you know, the amount of time we are spending on each statement that Swami made, I don't think we may finish it in this satsang, but let's make that attempt. The third statement in that same poem is Swami saying that I am attached to one work which I love to do. And what is that? To remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack. Just imagine, Prem, this was in 1947. Swami is telling that I'll remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack. At that time, if we see Swami's life, he himself was so poor. Means in the terms of the way world sees as poverty. And he himself lacked so many things apparently. It really, that itself I feel is a sign of divinity. When you have nothing, nothing and literally nothing, and you say that I will remove the suffering of all the poor and grant them what they lack. It is so amazing, and that Swami indeed did that. You know, we know how we have discussed in Satyam Shyam Sundaram how Swami used to have only one ball of ragi for all his meals, whatever it was. He would use thorns from a bush as buttons for his shirt. He had only one pair of clothes which he had to wash on his own, because of which he would drape a towel around himself, wash and wait for the clothes to dry so that he can wear them back again.
And even when he was staying with his grandfather, he used to do that 2 kilometer running up and down to have lunch and cook food for his grandfather. What he would say is, because if I eat this food in front of my friends, they will think lowly of my family. Because that was the kind of lunch he was eating every day. And that Lord, you know, he's saying, I have come to remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack.
And he indeed did that.
And you know, even to look at it, when Swami's brother would have read this letter, his first impression would have been that. You know, what does this guy have that he's saying that I'm going to, you know, give what people lack?
And today when we see, of course, you know, in the direct physical sense, if we see, Swami has done a lot to alleviate poverty. You know, whether apart from providing water and providing hospital services, we know what happened when the Orissa floods came and washed away homes. Swami built homes literally, and I remember it, and it has special significance for me because I was part of the team that was documenting over there, and we wanted honest, candid opinions, you know, so we told the Sevadals to be away, directly went to these beneficiaries and asked them, and they spoke glowingly of Swami, and they always referred to him as Thakur. I later got to know that this word Thakur in Odia means God. So I asked them, why do you call him God? I mean, how do you know he's God? I was really curious. And then they said, sir, when we lost everything, our lands and our animals, our livelihood, everything got washed away. At that time, what did the government do? The government airdropped biscuit packets and food packets you know, sir, we may be poor, but we don't lack dignity. We don't want things to be thrown to us as if we are dogs. In such a condition, here comes these people, don't know from whom, they say they are coming from some Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. They treat us with such love and care. They have provided us temporary tents to stay and at the same time building homes for us. And these homes, even if all our generations together were to repay, we will not be able to construct a home like this. That is what is being given. A person who gives so much can be none other than God. And that's why we refer to him as God. You know, they were not introduced to Swami as God, but they felt Swami's love and they said, this has to be God. Because, you know, Swami did that. Swami, first instruction he gave was, he said, don't just build one huge building and say, everybody come and occupy this. So people are attached to their land, to their places. And so go to wherever they had their homes, wherever it was destroyed. And so in the three districts that Swami took up, the homes were built across a land area the lands were more than 200 kilometers apart. Some places 20 houses, some places 15 houses. Wherever it collapsed, it was built there and built in such a manner that if the same flood came again next year, nothing would happen to these homes. What else is it than Swami loving a work that he is attached to, which is to remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack.
And not only that, when Swami says, this is the work I'm attached to, and this is the work which I love doing, Swami also made it very clear that if you are going to be attached to me, if you are going to love me, you have to do what I love. You have to do what I find happiness doing.
Exactly.
And that's what Swami did. You cannot be a devotee and, you know, cannot express that love which Swami had. You could do it in any way, and that is what we're seeing all through the world, you know, people expressing it in all kinds of ways. You spoke of how Swami built houses, you know, for these families, and you've also spoken before about how in Trinidad people are doing a similar kind of thing where they're giving house for people who are homeless.
Exactly.
And you know, everywhere it is, whatever Swami did, Swami made sure that it also reflected and, you know, spread all through the globe.
You know, proof for that prem is, as we recounted, it's almost 1.5 years since we have started this Thursday Live. And for 1.5 years, every week, if Brother Raghu is able to speak about some seva activity that is going on in the world, it only shows that this ideal, this attachment to this kind of work to remove the suffering that Swami had, has been imbibed by people who love Swami also. Because if we love Swami, we love what he loves. And if Swami loves to work and alleviate the suffering of the poor, that is what we too should love to do. And that has been happening. It is indeed amazing, and that is why it is said that divinity is eternal. It is not restricted with just the form or the presence of the form. The spirit goes on forever.
And the statement of what Swami says, that grant them what they lack, this has inspired so many people's imagination, because as you said, the kind of stories which Raghu has brought for us, where people go into the slums, they don't have English education. So let's teach them English. You know, there's a youth group in Bombay which has started the Bol Bindas class, the BBC, where they found that, you know, children in the slum, they have aspirations equal to anybody else. So one of the things which they lack is their fluency in the language English. So they set up classes to teach them that, to give them what they lack.
Beautiful frame, because, you know, in the 50th birthday, during the All India Seva Dal conference, this is exactly what Swami said, you know. Swami said that the different conveners and state presidents, or, you know, different office bearers have presented before this assembly the seva activities going on in their state. He said, I am not interested in the numbers. And he said, you should not make it a competition in this way, that that state did these many things, so we'll do one more than that. He said, it's not about numbers. Swami said, it's about the need. People in different places have their own unique needs. They lack. What they lack is different, you know. The way we do Narayan Seva in India, you can't possibly do it in the United States of America.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, some of these very, very novel projects, like the SciNet project in Africa, where they found those people need protection from mosquitoes, you know, as a very, very primitive necessity for good health. So their Narayan Seva consists of giving each household mosquito nets.
Beautiful. So this is something that we should also take on as an expression of our love for Swami. in the places that where in the places where we live, we should have be on a lookout for what is it that people lack to make their lives happier in the true sense, in the sense bringing Swami to them, and provide that. That is true seva. It doesn't mean that we just have a standard operating procedure. That in that statement that Swami has said, grant them what they lack, that is so important to keep in mind.
The next statement which Swami is making here is again, and you know, it's a promise. At the same time, Swami also places a demand there. But I think before we come to that statement, we'll have some interesting discussion on that. Let's take a short break and we'll come back. Maybe we'll be able to complete the 3 points which Swami is making in that letter.
जिसके सर पर हाथ हो तेरा कौन बिगाड़े उसकी हर पल उसके साथ है बाबा हर पल रक्षा उसकी नाम सुमिरन जो भी करे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई नाम सुमिरन जो भी करे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे भव सागर से पार उतारे जन्म जन्म के पाप हरे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई राम साई राम साई राम मनोरथ मन में बसाए तुम्हारी शरण जो आए कोई मनोरथ मन में बसाए तुम्हारी शरण जो आए इन चरणों में मन चाहा फल बिन मांगे मिल जाए साई सवारे साई बिगड़ी बात सवारे साई बिगड़ी बात सवारे सुख संपत्ति भंडार भरे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई राम साई राम तीर्थ धाम हमारा हम साई के पुजारी परती तीर्थ धाम हमारा हम साई के पुजारी साई बाबा इस धरती पर शिव शक्ति अवतारी जब हो सर पे साया तुम्हारा जब हो सर हमारा कौन किसी विपदा से डरे, यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे, साईं राम साईं राम साईं राम साईं राम।
ओम साई जय साई श्री साई जय साई, ओम साई जय साई श्री साई जय साई।
साई गंगा साई जमुना साई मथुरा काशी, साई तो है घट घट वासी अजर अमर अविनाशी। साई नाम ब्रह्मा साई नाम विष्णु साई नाम शिव शंकर।
ओम साई जय साई श्री साई जय साई, ओम साई जय साई श्री साई जय
साई।
I think we couldn't have found a better song to fit that topic which we're going to talk about, you know, Sai Naam Sumiran Jo Bhi Kare. Whoever is coming to Swami and saying that, Lord, I am yours and I surrender to you, Swami says, I will take care of them and I'm proud of that. You know, that is what describes my glory. That's what Swami says in this Telugu line. And the beautiful thing is, Swami is saying here, I have a reason to be proud, for I rescue all who worship and adore me. And Swami says, with nishtha and niyama. Nishtha meaning determination or one-pointedness. And niyama means discipline.
Discipline and dedication.
Discipline and dedication.
Yes. And in this statement, you know, we can see the a kind of echoing of what had been done in the previous avatars. You know, if we take the Ramayana, there also Rama laid emphasis on the aspect of surrender, overruling everything else. Surrender is most important. That is why when somebody from the enemy camp, you know, Vibhishana, a demon supposed to be, he comes and seeks refuge at the feet of Lord Rama, Lord Rama asks his advisors, if we can say, call them so, you know, Sugriva and the others, and everybody advises him that this is the brother of the enemy. How can you take him into our camp and share our secrets with him? It's a dangerous and a stupid thing to do. But Rama does exactly that. He gives refuge to Vibhishana and he says, you are like my brother now. And then he says, you know, I do not know that beautiful Sanskrit shloka, but in that shloka he says that this is my vow, that those who take refuge under my feet, whomsoever it may be, I shall grant them refuge. That was what Rama said. If we come ahead to the times of Krishna, that is what Krishna also said. One who thinks of me incessantly, I'll take care of his yogakshema. I will take care of his yogakshema, meaning everything that he needs in this life and the afterlife, I shall take care. So I feel this is Swami's statement equivalent to those statements. I have a reason to be proud of, because proud in the sense my glory is described by the fact that I rescue all those who worship and adore me.
And you know this particular shloka which you referred to from the Bhagavad Gita, where he says Ananyas Chintayantuma. A beautiful explanation which Swami gives is, the literal translation of that is, those who think of me without thinking of any other, I shall take care of their yogakshema, as you said. But Swami in a discourse says, what is Ananyas Chinta?
Ananyas Chinta, huh?
What he is says, those who think of me as someone else. That is, you know, to think Ananya means somebody else.
As an other,
as a third party. Ananyas Chintayantoma, those who come to me and think of me as not somebody else, but think of me as their own. Think of me as one, being one with themselves. I will protect them without having, you know, leaving anything for chance.
Wow. Only, you know, Swami alone can twist to bring out a deeper meaning. I also remember that famous Tattvamasi, you know, which is supposed to be an Advaitic statement, which means thou art that. But on the face of it, it doesn't look like an Advaitic statement, because it says thou art that. So there's a thou and there's a that. You know, that two differences. And again, Swami resolved it so beautifully. He just said it is not tat tvam asi, but it is tatvam asi, which means tatvam is essence and asi is being or existence. So just with that little twist, Swami brought back glory and grandeur to that Advaitic statement in its true sense. And here again we see the same thing, changing Ananyas Chintayantoma from who think of me and not anybody else into Ananyas Chintayantoma, those who think of me as part of themselves. Wow.
And that's simply what Swami says here, those who come to me and say, Lord, I am yours. No, I belong to you, I am yours, and you're the one who owns me. That's what Swami says, Ananyas Chintayantoma, one who become mine and say, I am yours, even in that shloka which we all very often quote, you know, Anyata Sharanam Nasti, Tvameva Sharanam Mama. No, I come here as being one, as being yours. Now you only have to protect me. I'm not seeking protection from you, because when I say I'm yours, protection becomes your duty. I'm seeking you to do your duty, literally, you know, that's what it means. And how many times Swami has told that Telugu saying, there are people who come to me who don't have faith and suffer because of it. But never has been the case that those who have faith have suffered.
And actually Swami makes a generalized statement of this. He doesn't say about people having come to him.
Right.
He generally speaks about faith and says, Nammaka chadinavaru unnaru, kani nammi chadinavaru leru, leru, leru. There are people without faith who have got ruined, but people with faith are never, never, never ruined. That's what Swami says. You know, you're speaking about this Ananyas Chintayantoma poem from the Bhagavad Gita. A small digression, it reminded me of a Chinnakatha that Swami often narrates. I don't know if he narrated as often, but he has narrated it, and it's so amazing listening to him. Swami says that there was this pandit, this scholar, who was known for his knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. And once a wise king called him to court to explain to him and to expound on the Bhagavad Gita. And then it came to this particular shloka, which is Ananyas Chintayantoma Yejana Paryupasate Tesham Nityabhiruktanam Logakshemam Vahamyam Yogakshemam Vahamyam. So he began to explain how Krishna says that those who think of me incessantly, or those who think of me always, and he also gave the different meanings and different subtle interpretations of that, I will take care of their everything. He did a pretty good job of it, but the king then tells that you have not understood this poem properly. Go back, think over it, come back tomorrow and tell me what it is. So the scholar is surprised, startled. He goes back, comes again the next day and does a better effort of the same. Again gets the same reply from the king. This is not the meaning, go back, come again. Go back, come again. Go back, come again. This happens for a week. After which the scholar is frustrated at home. His wife sees him worried, asks him what happened. He says, you know, I don't know, I have done my best. This is the best possible explanation, and the king still says, I have not understood it. I don't know, maybe the king is not understanding it. The wife just smiles, you know, and Swami says that the wise wife tells him. Swami often says that wife, W-I-F-E, stands for wisdom invited forever. He had told this to one lady, and that is what was the case for this scholar too. The wife tells him that, tell me, dear husband, why is it that you are going to the king? Says to expound the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. No, is that the reason? What is the ultimate objective? Says, yeah, he'll be pleased, he'll give me money, and you know, that is what we need for our livelihood. What is the meaning of the poem here? He says, yeah, it says that if you think of Krishna always, everything will be taken care. Says, then why do you go to the king? Then it strikes the scholar, you know. It hits him. And the next day he just doesn't go to the court. He realizes that if he contemplates and thinks of Krishna, Krishna will take care of him. And that is when the king in the court, Swami says, announces that the scholar has today understood the meaning of Ananyas Chintayantoma. And he himself goes with his royal retinue to the house of the scholar and showers him with gifts divine. It seems paradoxical, but it is the truth that when we clamor after worldly things, they seem to be running away from us. The minute we realize that the only thing permanent is the Lord and stick on to him, all the world seems to come and kiss our feet.
You know, even when I, even as I read this statement, I'm reminded of one very nice incident which was shared with me by one of my classmates.
Mm-hmm.
This boy's sister was living in one in Chennai, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And before she moved on, she actually, I think after that, after her marriage, she moved on to US.
Mm-hmm.
During the time she spent in that city, she would go to one of the coastal villages.
Mm-hmm.
And conduct Balvikas classes for the children of those fishermen over there. You know, she would gather all of them. And there used to be a Mahalakshmi temple on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
So she would gather all of them there and, you know, she would sit and teach them. They had absolutely no idea about Swami. So she had introduced Swami. She had taught them, you know, shlokas and how to worship Swami and all that. And then, as I said, she moved on after that. And during the time when, you know, we all heard of the tsunami happening, how devastating it was for those coastal villages.
In 2006,
right.
Year.
And on that day when it happened, I think it was 24th of December.
2006.
Sometime. And these children, you know, these Balvikas children, were all playing in the seashore that day.
Hmm.
And when they were playing, one lady came by and she said, "Now all of you get up, enough of your games. All of you go to the temple." This temple was in a very, elevated platform.
Mm.
So she said, "All of you go to the temple." So these children had never seen this lady before and they continued playing. So she started, shouting at them and reprimanding them, and she very forcefully pushed all those children to the temple. And after they all went to the temple, the tsunami came and all those people, you know, all those huts which were there on the seashore were washed away.
Mm.
And never before or after this incident they had actually seen that lady.
Oh. Wow.
And that's when they realized that maybe Swami himself came in that form of that lady. Not maybe, definitely Swami came in that form of that lady and saved. And Swami is saying here that those who take my name, those who worship me, I will come and protect them.
And since it's, dear listeners, the time is almost 1:55 p.m. and actually there are so many more beautiful stories regarding this, of people having taken Swami's name. And when we take up Swami's name, it is never in vain. Swami always comes to our rescue. But in order to complete this historic letter, we've come to the next line, which is, I think, most important for all of us. It gives us so much of food for thought, points to ponder. And in that, Swami says, "According to me, devotion is this. Those who are able to treat good and bad as the same, they are the ones who are true devotees." And this single statement alone, I think, is such food for thought for us, Prem, because again in discourses, Swami has said how when the wishes are fulfilled, we put up hundreds of pictures of Swami all around the house, and when the wishes are not granted, we take the photos and put them back into the cupboard. He says, is this devotion? No. Sukha dukhe same kritva labha labhav jaya jayo. One who is able to have equanimity in the face of profit and loss, sorrow and joy, he is a true devotee. That is what even Lord Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita. One who has got equanimity, he is the one who is dearest to me.
And you know, just going back to all these points that Swami has made, mm-hmm. if you look at it, you know, Swami says, those who stray away from the path, I will bring them back to the right path.
Mm-hmm.
Those who lack something, the poor who need, you know, health or wealth, whatever it is, I will give them what they lack.
Hmm.
And if you come to me seeking refuge, I will give you refuge. If you come to me for protection, I will protect you.
Hmm.
But none of these actually stand for devotion.
Hmm.
You know, you can worship Swami, you can adore Swami, but that is not devotion. You know, you come and seek something from Swami and you get it, that is not Swami certifying your devotion.
Hmm.
And finally, Swami saying the only certificate for devotion which I will give is if you treat good and bad as alike. That is what is devotion for me.
If you have equanimity.
Equanimity.
After that, he gives a wonderful reassurance. Swami says, I will never give up those who attach themselves to me. I remember Swami saying in a discourse, you may give me up, but I will never give you up. That statement, I mean, we can enshrine it in our hearts and draw strength and inspiration and express our deepest gratitude that we have such a wonderful, such a loving, such a beautiful Lord who decided to touch our lives And it's our great fortune that our lives got touched by him. Let us make the best of this opportunity.
Indeed, dear listeners, it was just a drop in the ocean, and you know, even that would be an understatement to say that, because each of these points that Swami has made, I'm sure each one of us in our lives will have incidents to, you know, portray each of these points that Swami has made.
You know, that's what even Swami tells in the letter. He says, how great are some people, because even in their lifetime, through all their effort, they will not be able to realize my Shakti. And then Swami goes on to say, nobody can do me any harm. Do not think even in your dreams that I will get spoiled. I do understand that you have returned to me with love and affection and nothing else. I do not have any dissatisfaction in my mind. And so Swami reassures his brother, and today when we read, it is actually a reassurance to all of us. And then that also Swami says in the next few lines when he writes, I have written to you in detail. I am replying to you because you may feel pained if I do not respond. Even this act of writing a letter is for your sake. I have nothing to gain or lose from that. That is exactly what Swami said even when the topic of setting up Radio Sai came, you know. This is what Brother Sai Prakash told me. He said, Swami said, that is for your satisfaction you are doing. I have nothing to gain or lose from this setup. Institution that we call Radio Sai. Swami is not attached to that also. His love and concern is only direct, heart to heart. And that is why I express gratitude that Swami indeed gave us Radio Sai and given us this chance to work here. And I'm sure thousands of devotees across the world will be grateful for the same, because Swami has done all this for us selflessly, nothing for himself.
And to that Lord, we offer our most humble pranams and this humble effort of ours. And all that we can do is, in a sense, congratulate ourselves that we've known this Lord and marvel at our good fortune that we've come to know of Swami. Dear listeners, we bring this afternoon satsang to a close. The next week we'll continue with Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Till then, happy listening. I'm going to leave you with another beautiful song with a beautiful message. And as the song fades, we'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program, Love to Love.
భాగ్యమో ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో ఎంత భాగ్యమో ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు భువిని సత్య సాయిగా నిలిచాడు భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు భువిని సత్య సాయిగా నిలిచాడు భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు ఎంత భాగ్యమో ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో ఎంత భాగ్యమో ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో రామకథను విన్నాము రాముని ధ్యానించాము రామకథను విన్నాము రాముని ధ్యానించాము రామా రామా శ్రీరామాని ఆర్తితో విలపించాము రామా శ్రీరామాని ఆర్తితో విలపించాము ధర్మమూర్తి శ్రీరాముడు దయతూపాడు ధర్మమూర్తి శ్రీరాముడు దయచూపాడు భువిని సత్య సాయిగా నిలిచాడు
భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు, భువిని సత్య సాయిగా వెలిచాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో. గోపాలకృష్ణుని మా పాలి దేవుని, గోపాలకృష్ణుని మా పాలి దేవుని, కృష్ణ కృష్ణ శ్రీకృష్ణాని గొంతెత్తి పిలిచాము, కృష్ణ శ్రీకృష్ణాని గొంతెత్తి పిలిచాము. చల్లని మా నల్లనయ్య కరుణించాడు, చల్లని మా నల్లనయ్య కరుణించాడు, భువిని సత్య సాయిగా వెలిచాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు, భువిని సత్య సాయిగా వెలిచాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో. హృదయాంతరంగ సాయి శ్రీ సత్య సాయిని, హృదయాంతరంగ సాయి శ్రీ సత్య సాయిని, సాయి 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 శ్రీ సాయి అని భక్తితో ప్రార్థించాము, సాయి శ్రీ సాయి అని భక్తితో ప్రార్థించాము. వరదాభయ దివ్యమూర్తి వరమిచ్చాడు, వరదాభయ దివ్యమూర్తి వరమిచ్చాడు, కరుణారస దివ్య దృష్టి సారించాడు, ప్రేమామృత దివ్య వృష్టి కురిపించాడు, కరుణారస దివ్య దృష్టి సారించాడు, ప్రేమామృత దివ్య వృష్టి కురిపించాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో. భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు, భగవానుడు మన కోసం దిగి వచ్చాడు, భువిని సత్య సాయిగా నిలిచాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు, భువిని సత్య సాయిగా వెలిచాడు, భువన చక్రవర్తిగా నిలిచాడు. ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో, ఎంత భాగ్యమో, ఎంతటి సౌభాగ్యమో.